Welcome into Life, Love, Faith, and Family, a production of the American Association of Christian Counselors. I'm Dr. Tim Clinton.
And I'm Dr. Zach Clinton, and together we're your hosts. Thank you for joining us.
If you enjoyed today's program and you feel called to help us equip the church to provide mental health care and to help those in need, visit our foundation at aaccfoundation.org. That's aaccfoundation.org. Hey, there you're going to find a little bit more about the impact we're having in local communities to strengthen families and individuals. We're on a mission to help equip people everywhere to improve their relationship with God and the ones they love.
We'd love for you to be a part of our family. Let's bring a message of hope and encouragement to today's generations. Your gift ensures that this program and your station remain on the air. And on today's program, my dad, Dr. Tim Clinton, will be joined by a great guest. So let's get started.
All right, you're listening to Life, Love, Faith, and Family. I'm Dr. Tim Clinton, host here, along with my son, Zach. What a delight to have you. Thank you for joining us. Our special guest, Warren Farrell, Dr. Warren Farrell. He has been a pioneer in both the women's and men's movement. He's an author of several books, including The Boy Crisis, a book about how renewing our sons' sense of purpose to help them become men, fathers, and leaders worthy of our respect. He's been interviewed by Oprah, Barbara Walters, Jordan Peterson, Larry King, so many others. Dr. Farrell, what a delight to have you. Thank you for joining us.
I'm really looking forward to talking with you once again.
Well, as we get started, I know you have a real burden for our boys. You wrote that book, Boys in Crisis. What's happening? What are you learning? What's in the middle of all this chaos that we're seeing? A lot of people believe we're losing our boys.
We are losing our boys. That's really clear. And I wasn't sure of that when I started the research for the boy crisis. I submitted 10 causes of the boy crisis, and I found that to do 10 sections on it. And I found that the more I researched, the more I found that there are a lot of things that contributed to the boy crisis. But when, for example, if a boy grew up in a mother and father involved home and went to a school where there was almost all female teachers, the statistical significance on the amount of damage done to him was very minimal. But if he grew up in what I would call a dad-deprived family, where the dad wasn't involved either because of a divorce or the single mother never got married and never lived with the father, and he went from a single mother home to an almost all-female school, the boy had no positive, constructive male role model. And he began to be much more able to be seduced by gang leaders, to be part of their family, to have a rep, or by drug dealers because he was usually a failure to launch and he wasn't very attractive to women because he didn't earn any money, flipping hamburgers at McDonald's. And so that he was easily able to be seduced by that. And we also know that, we saw the movie Spotlight, that the priests sought out boys that were doing molesting, sought out boys who had the need for a father. Hitler's youth, the same thing, looked for boys that didn't have a father. And so I realized that it was the other causes, the other things were not causes, they were contributors. But dad deprivation was that basically the boy crisis resides where dads do not reside.
It's interesting to me, if you look at the research out there, Dr. Farrell, the majority of Americans really believe that dads matter, that the influence of a father, it's a game changer. A child doesn't have that, boys in particular, I mean, it's devastating. It knocks these kids sideways, and they get lost pretty easy. Next thing you know, they're in deep trouble. We see them turning, when you don't have involved fathers, they're turning to television, video games, digital media, and so much more, trying to figure out realms where maybe they can conquer or whatever, find areas that they can have impact in, and the fruit of it is just absolutely alarming.
It really is. And, what you're saying, every single word you just said, what I found, what had statistical evidence behind it, it was really quite accurate. I remember one young man writing me, and he said, I live with my mother. I really became, my mother didn't like men. I had huge arguments with her, got passed on to my grandmother, who also didn't like men. I felt so alone. I started withdrawing into video games. I got involved with these neo-Nazi types of sites, some of whom had committed mass murders. So I created a 52-page manifesto to create a mass murder, one of the biggest ones that could possibly be done, so I'd really be seen and have an impact. I read the Boy Crisis book for somebody. Somebody passed it on to me, and I reluctantly read parts of it. I now see the importance of my dad and what, and then wanting to know, what can I do about it? How can I find other male mentors? And the importance of the mom knowing what dads contribute, and the importance of dads knowing what they contribute. Moms can't hear what dads don't say. I found that I couldn't find in any books or magazines anything that was telling dads that there's roughhousing isn't just a game you play. It's statistically able to be shown that children who do roughhousing with their father, when the father stops the roughhousing, when the kids get too rough, learn the difference between being assertive versus aggressive. They also learn the difference, the ability to, they learn empathy. They learn that they're forced to consider their sisters and brothers' needs, who they'd otherwise like to push around in the roughhousing, because if they don't, dad will stop the roughhousing, and they'll be like, you know, they'll lose their treat. The roughhousing, it's like a dog that doesn't do what you that does what you want them to do when they know that they're going to lose the treat. And they also learn postpone gratification, because what they'd like to do is push their brother or sister aside, but they know they'll lose the roughhousing if they do. So they don't push their brother and sister aside. So that means they have to postpone the gratification of winning immediately in order to win more fairly. And as you probably know, I'm sure you know, that postpone gratification is the single biggest predictor of success or failure.
Dr. Farrell, so what you're saying is, in all the research and the digging you were doing, you found out that dads do make a unique contribution. The gift of empathy, for example, you just mentioned, comes primarily through a relationship with dad. So if that piece goes missing, the wiring or the rutting that starts happening in brain development is going in the wrong direction, in other words. And this is stuff that's tough to undo. So in other words, dads really do matter, period. And by the way, how they love matters.
How they love matters. And so, you know, moms are often very empathetic to children and very protective and very compassionate, of course. But empathy that goes one way creates self-centeredness. If the children are not required to also empathize with their brothers and their sisters and their mothers and fathers' feelings around a dinner table at night, parents who are very empathetic and only express empathy toward the children's feelings often find that they make the children self-centered. And that's a real curse for an empathetic parent, because here they are, they're beautiful in their heart, but yet they aren't requiring the child to also think of others. And so one-way empathy does not create empathy. One-way empathy begets self-centeredness. Mm-hmm.
I know that we're talking about the Boy Crisis, and that's your heart right now and has been, but in the midst of it, were there certain developmental periods that were really significant for father presence and influence?
No, actually, there probably is an especially strong period during early adolescence, but Kyle Pruitt, who did research on this issue, found that even when children are in the womb, and if they're premature, they are likely to be able to be released from that womb when the father is present, more than when the father is not present. At every single age, this was quite surprising to me, that every single age of development, the father's presence is really important. And so if I were to advise a family, I would say that, you know, that once your family has an income that's $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 for a family of four, the Harvard University study of happiness longitudinally shows that once that income level is reached, the children benefit more from dad's time than dad's dime, if you will.
Wow. You are one of those leading experts in this area, Dr. Farrell, and in the midst of it, you must really spin when you hear conversations about like toxic masculinity and more, and this effort to, quote, take dad out of the picture, you will. You know, in media, dad gets a pretty bad rap. You know, that buffoon, disengaged, horrible fathers, as we all, I mean, just the list goes on and on. Just your take on that.
One of the best examples of this was I was being filmed for something on this issue, and I was talking about what high school boys hear in school about toxic masculinity. And I realized I'm not a high school boy. So I saw this high school boy walking by just randomly, and he was curious about the cameras. And so he asked, what are you doing? And I explained, I said, you look like you're in high school. Is that right? And he said, yes. And I said, you also have a vibe of being heterosexual. Is that accurate? And he said, yes. And I said, do you have a girlfriend now? And he said, yes. And I said, well, tell me, what do you hear in school about masculinity and yourself? Now, it turns out he went to an all-boys school where you think there'd be a lot of positive things about masculinity. He said, I hear all the time that it's toxic masculinity, that I'm part of the patriarchy, that the patriarchy was created to benefit, to make rules to benefit men at the expense of women, that I'm an oppressor. And I mean, he just went on like this for quite a while. So I said, well, when you tell your girlfriend about this, you know, what does she say? She said, oh my God, I would never tell my girlfriend about this. She's a feminist. And she would just probably break up with me if I did. I said, are you thinking about marrying her? And he goes, yeah, I think so. And I said, would you talk to her about this before you marry her? Oh, I don't know. I mean, how sad. I mean, he said at one point that, you know, I sometimes think I wish I wasn't born a man. And I have heard that from so many high school boys. It is really, it is truly a crime, because what we, I say this as somebody who, as you know, I was on the board of directors of the National Organization for Women in New York City and spoke all around the world on women's issues. And I really wanted women to be strong, to be powerful, to be able to be whoever they wanted to be, whether that was homemakers or, you know, in the workplace. But I didn't want women to hone victim power as a fine art. When people become specialized in getting power by being victims, we don't end up increasing the respect for them. We end up sort of being afraid of them, but backing off from real respect for them. And so it is really deeply sad to me what the way boys are feeling about themselves. And when you have a combination of that ideology out there, combined with not having a dad to enforce boundaries, to develop postponed gratification, to teach you how to be a man that's constructive, positive, caring, and loving, then that is deeply sad.
Dr. Farrell, we often hear this term, failure to launch.
Yes.
That these boys get into that place where they just, maybe it's a, I think you call it a purpose void. They just don't know who they are, or where they're going. I guess that those are developmental milestones that should have been accomplished years ago as they were growing up. And when they don't have connectivity, say with a father, they're lost, or they've experienced horrific brokenness or whatever it is. Boy, it really stunts them, doesn't it? And then because we're made for relationship, what they begin to do is they begin to reach for anything to anesthetize that emptiness or that hole in their soul, right?
The hole in their soul is absolutely right. And if I am to say anything from my heart to you, if you are in a situation where there's a divorce and you're speaking negatively about the other parent, particularly the mom speaking negatively about the dad, and the boy looks in the mirror and he doesn't have his father, but he hears that his father's irresponsible or a narcissist or a liar or undependable, and he begins to think, well, I'm looking in the mirror. Maybe I'm a narcissist. Maybe I'm a liar. I remember I lied. And he begins to absorb the possibility that because he's half the genes of the dad, that the things that he's overhearing that are negative about the father are things that must be negative about him. And because he can't, because he doesn't want to make the family more insecure, he can't talk to his mother about that because his mother will feel blamed. He can't talk to his father about that because he doesn't want the father and mother to get into a fight and increase the insecurity he has and the lack of father that he has. So he feels all alone in those feelings and becomes depressed and anxious and begins to look at himself as basically a loser. And so I'd like us to look at bad-mouthing the other parent as one of the worst forms of child abuse, and to make sure that we don't do that within any ability of our children to detect that.
Hopefully, if you're struggling at home, maybe God somehow brings someone into your life who can help fill that void. Maybe it's a coach or a mentor, or maybe a teacher, a Sunday school teacher, a school teacher, and more. Dr. Farrell, have you learned anything about that kind of influence and the significance of that? Because people get terrified. You know what? I mean, my dad, he was gone, or I'm raising a boy and his daddy's gone. His dad doesn't want anything to do with him. What do we do? How do we step into this?
First of all, is the value of faith-based communities. I spoke in Bedford-Stuyvesant in Brooklyn once to a major church there. And and afterwards, the church leader got me together with 32 boys. And they had all been in boys groups. And I asked them, what was were these groups important to you? And of the 32 boys, I'd say about 28 said to me, if it wasn't for being involved with this church community, I would still be out there doing the same things that got me into prison. 28 of the boys had been to prison out of the 32, and about 25, 26 of them said this version of that. And I said, well, what was there about your belief in God? And they said it was both the belief in God, but also the effort of our minister to get me aside and to tell me what was good about me, and also to let me know what things I could improve on. And once I felt that I was valued and I had something to offer, and so it was his personal leadership, as well as feeling that I didn't have a father, or I didn't have the father that was involved. I was dad deprived. That was, but I had somebody that really cared. I had God the Father, and I had this minister looking after me.
Yeah, I love that verse of scripture. Though my mother and father forsake me, the Lord will deliver me up. Dr. Farrell, I guess the question that begs to be answered is the road forward. I know in your heart you've been working feverishly. You're committed to it. And when you think of the next generation of fathers and more, what do you hope that they will do? What are you praying that God will place in their hearts? And I love that verse out of the Bible in the book of Malachi, that one day God would turn the hearts of the fathers toward their children and the hearts of the children back toward their fathers.
When the hearts of the fathers are turned toward their children, the children's hearts will be turned toward their fathers. That follows. But I think if I were to say what can do the most good, it's like what we did in Florida. The Florida legislature, every single Republican and every single Democrat voted for a bill to spend $70 million educating fathers and mothers as to the value of fathers. Dads need to know that they're valued. When men are told they're needed, we respond. Every generation has had its war. We've told men that they're needed in that war, and men were willing to kill and be killed when they were told they're needed. Now we're asking men to love and be loved, but to educate yourself as to exactly what you contribute, to communicate that kindly and lovingly to the mother, listen to what she contributes, be able to communicate effectively with her where you're both hearing each other. As you probably know, the new book I wrote is called Role Mate to Soulmate, and it teaches people how to be able to handle criticism without becoming defensive, and other skill sets like that, which we tend to have when we have somebody that differs with us or criticizes us. We need to know how to work out checks and balance parenting so that the father that's saying it's okay to climb the tree and the mother that's saying, no, it's not okay to climb the tree, can communicate with each other about what are the benefits of tree climbing and what are the dangers of it, and work out compromises around that issue. And so I think fathers need to know not just that they're needed, but exactly why we are needed.
One of your famous quotes, mom has rights, but dads have to fight for their kids.
Yes,
I love that.
Yes, and that's another thing we need to do is we need to work with our legislatures to say, if there is a divorce, then equal shared parenting must be the starting position. We have huge amounts of evidence to show that children that have four things after divorce, an equal amount of time with mom and dad. The mom and dad live within 20 minutes drive time from each other, so the children don't have to give up activities and friendships and being part of a team to go to the other parent's home. A third, that there is that the mother and the children are not able to detect any bad mouthing from mom to dad or dad to mom. And fourth, that there be couples communication counseling or relationship counseling that the parents engage in, not just at the time of emergencies, but also but consistently, so that there's time to hear the other parent's perspective.
Dr. Warren Farrell, what a delight to have you. If people want to learn more information about you, maybe the Boy Crisis book and more, where can they go?
They can go. The Boy Crisis book just is on Amazon. It's the least expensive to get it. Support your local bookstore if you have the money to do that. And then for the Roommate to Soulmate book, that's available. It's pre-ordered now on Amazon. And that's the book I feel is really helpful to prevent the divorces and to prevent the what I would call the psychological divorces, or if you have children, the minimum security prison marriages that many parents deal with.
What a meaningful, important conversation. Dr. Farrell, I'd love to have you back again. Thank you so much for joining us.
It is a total pleasure to be with you. And I respect not just the way you interview, but what you are doing in this world is such an extraordinary contribution.
Thank you, friend.
Thanks for listening to Life, Love, Faith, and Family, a production of the American Association of Christian Counselors. If you enjoyed today's broadcast and want to help equip the church to provide Christian mental health care, visit aaccfoundation.org. Your donation ensures this program and your station stay on the air. On behalf of our co-hosts, Dr. Tim Clinton and his son, Zach, this is Jim Kress. We look forward to having you with us again next time. May God bless you.
This is Dr. Shawnee Anderson, and I'm a licensed clinical psychologist who's been in practice for over 30 years. In my clinical experience, one of the hardest parts for someone struggling with their mental health is the very first step, the just reaching out for help part. I understand that asking for help is hard, but finding that help shouldn't be. At Christian Care Connect, the mission is to make it easier to find a Christian clinician or coach who is compatible with you, someone you feel comfortable with, who shares your faith and values. Whether you're walking through grief, battling anxiety or depression, or facing any other of life's challenges, excellent mental health care providers are here to come alongside you with support that is both clinically excellent and distinctly Christian. If you or someone you know is looking for help and healing, we invite you to take that next step today. Go to ChristianCareConnect.com to find a provider within 100 miles of you. For further support or questions, you can email us at contact@ChristianCareConnect.com. A new way to start your journey to wellness and peace of mind.
Don't miss the 2026 AACC Faith and Flourishing Mega National Conference, with a special emphasis on neuroscience and brain health. Coming to the Lowe's Arlington Hotel in Arlington, Texas, in September 2026. Featuring world-leading and dynamic experts like Daniel Amen, George Barna, Jack Graham, Sungyung Tan, Sharon May, Kurt Thompson, Jennifer Ehlers, Shawnee Anderson, Zach Clinton, Tim Clinton, and more. Join counselors, psychologists, marriage and family therapists, pastors, ministry leaders, and coaches from around the world. Register now for the best savings at nationalaacc.com. That's nationalaacc.com. The 2026 AACC Faith and Flourishing Mega National Conference.
Do people ever come to you asking for help? Maybe hope? How about prayer? Do you ever wish you understood the issues better that people are wrestling with? Or how about how to use the Bible more effectively in caring for people? If so, I'd love to get a copy of our Care and Counsel Bible in your hands, featuring 116 topics written by some of the world's best mental health and ministry experts. I think you'll love it. Topics like discouragement, abuse, depression, divorce, anxiety, abortion, and more. So you can learn more about these issues and how to use the Bible more effectively, how to share passages of Scripture with others, maybe even yourself, as you're sitting down over a cup of coffee. You know what I love most about this Bible is that it's so easy to use. You can find right up front an index with subjects, key passages of Scripture, personality profiles, and so much more to go to. So you can use the Bible more effectively in caring for other people. The Care and Counsel Bible right now is retailing for $85. We're going to make it available to you for just $49.99 plus shipping. I think you're going to love it. Hey, for more information about how you can get this Bible right now, go to careandcounsel.com. That's careandcounsel.com.